This is The Guardian.
Regid Ahmed here on Gadigal land with the full story. This summer, one of the oldest and fiercest rivalries in sport continues as England take on Australia in the Ashes. It's a contest that's been going on for more than 140 years, and this time it takes place on Australian soil. Australia have had the upper hand in recent times, but England will try to reverse that streak as they attempt to win a test match in Australia for the first time in almost 15 years. To help you follow all the action, we'll be replaying episodes of the Guardian Ashes weekly podcast throughout the summer.
Hi, Guardian Ashes Weekly fans, Max here. Some good news is the England side was announced after we recorded this podcast, but Will Jacks is in. So all the stuff we say about Will Jacks is good. The bad news is that Usman Khawaja was ruled out after we recorded the pod, so any stuff we say about him is less relevant. Even better news, the pod's really good, so listen to it or watch it. Thank you. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Ashes Weekly, supported by Qantas, the spirit of Australia. To Brisbane, forget that England haven't won at the Gabba since 1986. Forget that Australia are the best team in the world with the pink ball. Forget that Mark Wood is injured. This is where the comeback begins. Question then, who comes in for Wood? Will Travis Head open for Australia? Apart from its pink, what is different about the ball? And how important is it to avoid batting at dusk? Have England learnt anything? Will anyone ever leave a ball outside the off stump ever again? Would you rather be rubbish or arrogant? And would anybody want to go to Canberra? I'm Max Rushton. Let's look ahead to the second test on the Guardian Ashes Weekly. On the panel today, Guardian cricket writer Emma John. Hey, Emma.
Hello.
Welcome from the grade cricketer, top of the sports charts in Australia, Sam Perry. Welcome, Pez.
Hi, Max.
And the Guardian Australia's Jeff Lemon. All right, Jeff.
Yes, nice to see you as usual.
Okay, we've had sort of, 10 days to digest what happened in Perth. That's a lot of digesting, Emma. It still feels like such a lost opportunity, Emma, but I don't know how you've processed it.
Well, I mean, look, I haven't processed it. I'm in big time denial, Max. I mean, yeah, there's a funny thing about everyone talking about what do the teams do with this big long gap, especially, you know, England not going to Canberra and there's this big gap between matches. Well, no one think of the fans. You know, what are we supposed to do? Like, our emotions are kind of like, we don't really know where to settle. And I think that's a big part of where there's been so much noise, right? Why everybody's got themselves so worked up about all these various issues of like going to Canberra and not going to Canberra. It's because honestly, there's nothing else that we can fix on. And what I think is really interesting is that if England had won in 2 days, I think a lot of the fans who are making a big fuss now and are like, this is terrible and, you know, give us back our money for the days that we didn't get to see, England fans would be thrilled. Like, I'm an England fan. If I'd gone out to Perth and England had won in 2 days and I'd had three more days to go to the beach, that's a perfect scenario. I suppose maybe I'm not thinking widely enough here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big if, I guess, Sam, isn't it? Because England didn't win in 2 days. What have you made of the noise? I think it's been quite interesting that, it, you know, there was so much criticism, but then there's almost a reaction to the reaction. And it's almost gone so full circle now that I'm fully baz-balled again.
Yeah, I think the way that England plays should leave fans feeling hopeful, because I think history dictates that England, both its players and its nation as a whole, must now start to commence the demoralisation process. In Australia, the sun feels sharper, hotter, the skies bluer, everybody a little coarser towards them. But the way these guys play, they've almost inoculated themselves from outside influence. And that should actually give fans hope that they will come to Brisbane. They will do the same thing again. I don't play cards like Jeff, but I think if you double down, eventually things will fall your way. And I actually think that Canberra was a trap for England, and they've been canny enough to see it. I very much acknowledge what people say about respecting the fixture, respecting that it's the Prime Minister's fixture that he didn't even turn up to owing to marriage. But, like, if they flew to Canberra, they would have been met with 10-degree weather, balls that don't go above the knee, that would have been habitualised to get on that front foot press again, only to come back to the Gabba where it comes through the chest and be dismissed. I mean, the moment we saw Sam Constance bowling his first over in professional cricket, round the wicket, full tosses, I think was the moment that their decision to go to the Sunshine Coast was vindicated.
Yeah. Do you agree with that, Jeff? Because it's funny. I was so angry, probably because I just listened to, you know, Aggers and Michael Vaughan tell me how outrageous it is that England aren't going to Canberra. And then other people saying, actually, it's really different in there. It's like a deal. It's like not, there's actually no point going. So I sort of agree with Sam now.
I think maybe broadly we've all come around to this, and maybe this is the benefit of having that huge gap that Sam talked about, where the cycle can go from everybody being angry. Had they played 4 days later, they would have played a test straight off the back of having the snot kicked out of them for 4 days. But then they've had the extra week for things to go full circle. And in the end, yeah, what would have happened? Either they would have lost 7-4 to Peter Siddle, and that would have been embarrassing, or they would have smashed like 400 runs against Peter Siddle, and everyone would have said it didn't matter and it didn't count because it was a rubbish bowling attack of players who'd never played cricket before. And that was kind of true to some extent as well. So the calibre of the attack they faced would not have proven anything had they beaten them up, and would have proven way too much had they not beaten them up. And maybe it is better just to go and get bombed in the nets, except they probably didn't. They probably played golf the whole time.
I mean, isn't this, in hindsight, haven't they been vindicated by what happened in that England 11 fixture? That essentially, you know, the England Lions, who are the rookies, scored some pretty easy runs. The one person who really needed to impress, which was Jacob Bethell, nicked off for about 16, so that didn't help anybody. There were no wickets for Josh Tung, who was the, you know, the one pace bowler who they're thinking about bringing in for Brisbane. So it just feels like they were completely vindicated by hindsight, that it would have been a big old waste of their time.
And it turns out the big villain of all of this is Peter Siddle. Who knew? He thought he was going to get off scot-free for this series. What did you make, Sam, of Ben Stokes? Because he's sort of after the test, and obviously when a microphone is shoved under your face straight after losing, especially in that manner, you behave slightly differently to when you've had a bit of time to think about it. But I thought he sounded quite circumspect and, you know, sort of acknowledged there was a different argument about Canberra and about fans and how they feel about the side, when he sort of said, you know, I'd rather be called rubbish but not arrogant. I thought he sort of played that quite well.
Yeah, I also thought when, like, Aggers followed him up about going to Canberra, he was well within his rights to say, I literally just answered that question, which is true. And that will obviously get spun as him sounding terse and rattled. I mean, everything gets its meaning following the performance. I mean, as Emma was saying, you know, the England fans' enjoyment of Australia now gets its meaning following England's loss. I think Stokes has been completely fine in his comments, but because they've lost, everything is going to get spun. It was curious to me that he clapped back at the accusations of being arrogant. I mean, firstly, like, Australian cricket has been built on arrogance. I don't think anyone in Australia cares if a team is arrogant, frankly.
What an arrogant thing to say there. So.
Well,
unless they lose.
Yeah, again, and it gets spun in retrospect. I mean, I do think there is an argument that England's style and its rejection of, it's almost full rejection of any truth of cricket that's come before it could be argued to be arrogant, but I also think that no one really cares. So I was curious that he clapped back at that. I was also curious that he seemed to concede that he'd made mistakes in his captaincy in the first game, which is not something that I'd normally associated with Stokes either. Normally they are sort of a fundamentalist truth to how they play. So I would be buoyed by that as an England fan. I would see that as evidence that perhaps they are learning something.
I think it's actually very Stokes to say, hey, look at me. This was my fault. This is all about my captaincy was wrong. We could have bowled to head differently. I could have changed my plans better, but it didn't say anything about the batters. And it was the batters that lost it, not the bowlers. Mm. So in some ways, I thought he was missing the point entirely.
Even Joe Root, who's normally, you know, the most reasonable of the lot, but talking about the shot that got him out chopping on and how, oh, it was just a good way to try to get on top of the bowlers. And, well, another day I might have just nicked that past the stumps and the keeper for four. Yeah, you might have, but that's not a good way to structure your innings, where you go, I'm just going to play the shots that I say nick towards the cordon. And on a good day, they might just go through the cordon and not be caught. On another day, I might not chop back onto my stumps. It's not the way that you're trying to play. It's not the way that you're setting up to play, particularly having faced like 10 balls on a pitch where you haven't made any in the first innings and it's bouncing a lot. It didn't seem to indicate a whole lot of a deep thought process about what had gone on and just how match losing that Root dismissal in that cluster of dismissals in the second innings was.
Yeah. Although some of the sensible criticism has been about, look, in the India series, England did bat kind of sensible Baz ball. You know, there were periods where they built innings where they actually occupied the crease a bit more, and that's what people were hoping for. And even if they don't publicly self-reflect too much, you imagine they might do that.
Yeah, that this is now when we get a return to Baz ball with brains, as I think it got called. And I think in some ways, look, everyone said, oh, it's really unusual that the captain comes out this far ahead of a test at all. And it was a PR exercise. Actually, it's very sensible. I think it's kind of good off-field captaincy, essentially, what he's doing. And I think there must be a load of things that they're talking about that they're not talking to us about, right?
Sure.
That's the kind of thing that you think they don't want to talk. They don't want to say the thing that everyone's thinking, which is, can you just do this the sensible way now?
Yeah. What do you expect, Sam?
Thinking positively for England here, they've experienced such a wild, disastrous capitulation that they will be forced to kind of bring some sort of like reflection to the next game. And I think that it reminds me of the 2023 series, although the manner of the loss at Edgbaston was different. There was such a wildness to Stokes' declaration and there was such a response to it. It almost forced them to just tighten up and finesse some of those rougher edges to their game. So I thought this loss was similar in that sense. I'd expect that the next time they're in a situation where they can press home an advantage against Australia, there might be more circumspection. But as I say that, I realise that's in complete opposition to the way they think. So that moment that everyone's isolated now in the test match where they're 100 ahead, 9 wickets in hand, it seems pretty clear now that they were taking that opportunity to drive home the advantage in a way that was meant to kind of emotionally damage Australia. A million runs at 10 and over, and they kind of got ahead of themselves, got greedy, and maybe that greed will be tempered if they find themselves in that situation again. Maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, they have to find themselves in that situation again, I guess, which might be tricky. Jeff, Mark Wood ruled out the second test. How big a blow is that for England, do you think?
Yeah, it's a curious one because you would have imagined them breaking up his appearances anyway. So him playing, say, tests 1, 3 and 5 wouldn't be the wildest suggestion at the start of the tour a la Jasprit Bumrah in England recently. The problem with keeping back a trump card to play test 5 is you might have already been annihilated by then. So probably front loading that a bit more would have been the way. And they were sort of coy about whether it's injury or whether it's precautionary and they want to be careful with him and all the rest of it. He bowled 11 overs. Can you have a guy come in and play a test match if bowling 11 overs means he needs a rest after the second day? Because he could have had to bowl for 3 more days. You know, there is that prospect in test cricket that it might have been a 5-day match and he might have had to bowl 35 overs. So I'm surprised that if there's not actually an injury, if it's just medical conservatism, that seems an odd thing to have when you've got an 11-day break between test matches for a guy who's bowled 1 over for each of those days. It seems a peculiar kind of setup. But I suppose they've got enough bowlers with swing as a weapon that they think, well, they can cover for the pink ball game and just make absolutely sure, just take every possible precaution to have him right when they go to Adelaide, which might not be as bowler-friendly or as swing-friendly.
Emma, you mentioned that Josh Tong didn't get any wickets in Canberra, and Ali Martin did a piece saying that Will Jacks looks likely to be the favourite. There was a kind of bowl-off between him and Chaubashir yesterday. You imagine with sort of the X-Factor judges, Louis Walsh and Simon Cowell there, just going, oh, you've picked the wrong delivery there, Shoaib. So for casual Ashes watchers, right, for fans who don't really watch county cricket or don't really watch anything but the Ashes, who is Will Jacks? Tell me he bats like Chris Tavare, please.
So, yeah, I think that fans will sort of tend to know him more for his batting than his fingerspin bowling, right? I mean, he's played 2 test matches and he actually is kind of a, you know, in those 2 tests, the Pakistan tests in 2022, he was kind of a bit of a, you know, like a good mascot for the team. You know, he comes on and he's the first England debutant spinner to take a 5 for on test debut since 1993. But he's been playing white ball and that's the thing that people know him for. And it's just really a question of if you're going to have a spinner in the side and if you're looking to bolster the batting as well, Will Jacks is the one you go for, right?
And Sam, England have looked at what the West Indies did when they won in Brisbane and they brought in a sort of occasional off spinner, if that's unfair, on Kevin Sinclair, who I haven't watched every ball he's bowled, and he's like a decent batsman, and he helped West Indies win that test match.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when we talk about this England side, we bring people in and we talk about their skills and their capabilities and their features. But I think about Will Jack's the person here. That's a tough assignment to not really be part of the team too often other than specific situations. The seeming abandoning of Shoaib Bashir after 4 years of investment and say, hey, Will, we just want a little bit more batting, so can you go at six and over against Mitchell Starc with the pink ball, probably in tough conditions, and the rest of the bowlers. And when you bowl as well, as the ball gets soft and flat and the conditions become difficult for fast bowling, can you make sure you constrain Australia there as well, even though you're mainly a batter? I just think it's a tough scenario for him to come into. And it makes Kevin Sinclair from the West Indies look excellent, an excellent player. I do think that people presume the pink ball test in Australia, it's just a carnival for Mitchell Starc to run riot. But at the Gabba, it hasn't necessarily been the case. It's the one game Australia has lost in pink ball cricket. The other two that they won weren't necessarily convincing. And then when the West Indies did it, you had this scenario where clumps of wickets were lost in the first 10 to 20 overs from both innings in both sides, and then the next 30 to 50 overs was supreme batting. So I suppose they've picked Jacks, and both teams will pick their teams with that scenario in mind, because the last thing to happen in cricket, therefore, is the next thing that's going to happen.
Of course. Yeah. Jeff?
It's going to be a really nice bit of timing for us, because the England squad will probably be announced before this podcast goes out. So it's, you know, it's good for us to really get into what might happen. But if it is the Will Jack's Kevin Sinclair scenario, then Kevin Sinclair did backflips. So fundamentally, can Will Jacks do backflips? The Will Jacks flips. Yeah. If he can do that, then I'll be happy. That will be a good inclusion. But yeah, frankly, this England team needs someone who can come in and try to hit six over long on off the third ball they face. That's what's been lacking in this England side, that lack of initiative. That's what's really going to strengthen the batting, is the guy who opens in T10 cricket in innings in Abu Dhabi where seven blokes get stumped and comes in and whacks 48 off 10. That's the kind of thing that they want in this England side. So, you know, that may happen. Maybe they go with the quicks, and all of this conversation is redundant if Josh Tung plays. But I think, you come back to, and we'll probably talk about the pink ball a little bit, like what Sam says, particularly at Brisbane, it's been flat before. Pakistan got set bloody 500 a few years ago and nearly chased it. They made 450 batting last in a pink ball game at Brisbane. And it depends on the pitch, and we've had a couple of cooler summers in Brisbane in a row and wetter lead-ups to the test match where that can affect how much juice there is in the surface and all the rest of it, all of those strange, difficult to quantify, difficult to track factors. But it can be flat in Brisbane. It may not be flat in Brisbane, but it can be flat there, and it can be flat with a pink ball in the middle of an inning. So maybe you do get a situation where Will Jacks can come in and belt 80.
I hope he does now, just to spite you, Jeff. Yes, son.
I was just going to say, Brisbane is the best ground for retrofitting any tactic you want to suit conditions, because the Gabba is home to every single condition that exists in cricket, apparently. You can have a green monster. You can have humid conditions. It can go flat after 30 overs. It seams a lot, and if it seams, it means that it spins. You still get a lot of bounce, but between 30 to 50, it's quite good to bat. And don't forget, the drainage is good at the Gabba as well, even though there's storms. So you will hear before this test match and during it every single type of condition that exists at the Gabba, what it used to be, what it currently is, and you just use that to retrofit your preferred 11 when you're speaking to anybody.
Well, the Guardian Drainage Weekly is something I've pitched, and maybe this is the chance for it. We'll start part two talking about the pink ball.